Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Well, I promised it, so we might as well do it. 12 days of Christmas here at ESPN 97.5, and we always like to give back to the suspects whenever we get the opportunity, and here's one of those chances. We are celebrating Christmas early with our 12 days of Christmas, and all day today we're giving away a complete shaving solution system from More Unique Skincare. Sure, Raheel didn't just take all of these? Okay, caller number 15, 713-780-3776. The revolutionary five-step shaving system includes Hydro Glide Shave Gel, Razor Rash Relief Cream, Acne Wash, and more. Stay tuned for your chance to win all day, 7A to 7P, and head to moreunique.com to get your ultimate shaving solution system today. But caller 15 right now, 713-780-3776. Good luck to you. Get that great shaving system, including the Razor Rash Relief Cream.
Word.
I'm not saying anything. I don't have to say anything.
You know what he, when he doesn't say a word, you know what he says? Do it.
Do it.
I'm laughing about you in our ear, what you said.
Yeah, he has this unbelievable. He's so ignores eager. You.
He's like a wife.
So I go in there, tell the intern just we're going to do it at 3:15.
Yeah, you're like, hey, do the giveaway at 3:15. He's like, cool.
30 seconds later, he does it.
Hey, let's give it away. What? It's 3:03.
No, what's wrong with you?
The lips are smacked.
Well, that's why I did it off the air. I said, you know, I thought it'd be nicer to call you a penis off the air than it was on the air. I mean, I think there's a big difference.
Who brought it up on the air?
Barry.
Huh? What?
Barry.
What happened?
Laminack.
What happened? Hey, Joseph, I have a question for you about your kids.
Okay.
Is Taylor sending letters to Santa?
No.
Okay.
But she is obviously... Matter of fact, I did it Saturday where she sits on Santa's lap and tells Santa what she wants for Christmas.
Right.
But she hasn't gotten to the point of letters yet. I think school might do something like that, but they haven't done it yet.
Not yet.
Right. But of course, all kids do it.
Sure. So let me ask you if you, and you know, I'll say this, first of all, if you have kids in the car.
It is 3:00.
Now would be a good time to change the channel. This is gonna get bad for kids. So you have been warned appropriately. I'm going to count it down. You can come back at 3:15. But 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, you're on your own now if your kids hear this. So this kid named Jeremy was sending letters to Santa about his gifts. All right? Mm-hmm. This is the day after Christmas. And I'm going to read you what Jeremy wrote to Santa. All right? So he said, hold on, let me get this done here. He says, Dear Santa, D-E-E-R, Dear Santa, kid spells like me. Dear Santa, I am writing this on the day after Christmas, and I am very sad. I only received one of the two presents I asked for. Since you ate my cookies, I will assume that my missing gift was a mistake. I will give you 1 week to fix this. Jeremy.
How old is Jeremy?
I don't know, but he spells like an adult.
Like he's threatening Santa.
Mistake, M-I-S-S, space, T-A-K-E, assume was A-S-O-O-M. So pretty cute, right?
So he's from Louisiana.
Yes! Oh, suck it, Richard.
You're welcome.
So Santa wrote back.
Oh.
Dear Jeremy. I'm sorry you are disappointed with your presents. You asked for two very expensive presents, and Santa can only do so much. You need to learn to be grateful for what you have, not upset about what you don't. If you continue to complain, I will have no choice but to add you to the naughty list next year. Santa. It's not over.
Oh.
Jeremy's not playing this BS with Santa. He's not having it. So he wrote Santa another letter. Dear Fatty,
oh,
your threats don't scare me. I played your game and you did not deliver. This is not okay. I will give you 1 week and then you will pay. Jeremy. Yes. I don't know why you care that it is expensive when you have elf slaves to make things for you. I think you are naughty for having slaves. Dear Jeremy, Santa's not having it either. Santa's going, dear Jeremy, you are being a very bad little boy because you can't be happy with what you have. I have talked to your parents and told them to take away your Wii U. Now you have nothing. Once you learn to be grateful, perhaps you can have it back. I am very disappointed in you, Jeremy. You will need to be extra good boy next year if you want to make back on the nice list. Okay?
Still not over.
Jeremy's not done. Jeremy's getting the last word.
Based on his last threat, I would say he's older than you think.
If you saw the writing, yeah. Unless this is just an absolute hoax. Yeah.
But still good stuff.
Dear Santa, I do not like that stunt you pulled with my parents. You are on my naughty list now. Be afraid. You look slow and easy to kill. Enjoy your cookies next year because they will be poison. I hope you die. Underlined. Jeremy.
Wow.
Jeremy is a murderer. Jeremy
needs to be on a watch list.
Jeremy is
somewhere.
A serial killer.
He sounds like an arsonist.
Yeah. He's probably already killed an animal at that age.
For sure.
Whatever age
an
he
arsonist,
is.
Arsonist? He's not going to waste with fire. He's going to take care of business, that kid, the way he's talking.
I mean.
Poisoning people?
Could you imagine if Taylor sent a letter to Santa like that? Would you send one back?
No, but here's the thing. And, you know, again, you go back to what you went through as a kid. And I never really took it that seriously. The impact that just threatening. I'll tell you what. So I played basketball this weekend. And on my way back to the house, I called Lisa to see what's up. Now, until the baby has her shots, she can't be out in public and all that. So Lisa's like, well, I'm debating because I need to go to the Hallmark store and I need to get some cards and things. But I didn't think it was going to be too populated. I was going to take Taylor with. And she's like, I was like, okay. She goes, but the problem is that if Taylor goes in there, she's going to want something. And when I say no, she's probably going to blow a tantrum. And Lisa doesn't handle her tantrums the way I do. So I was like, you know what? I'm close. I'll meet you there. So I get in there and she's like, daddy, I want this and I want that. And I go, and she goes, and mommy said no. And I said, and mommy said no. So therefore the answer is no. And she starts getting that face and she's going to put her foot down and she's getting ready to say something. I go, see what I got here, Taylor? She's like, your phone. I go, I got Santa on speed dial. You take about one more step or make one more face. And if you start to cry, I'm calling him. And if I call him, the things that you want on your list that were the bigger things, we're going to start scratching them off one at a time because I'll do it before Santa gets there. No, like, what? And she goes, Then I go, man. You staying with mom? Or you walking outside with me? Because we can talk about this.
It's dirty pool.
And she's like, let's go outside. So she went outside and I go, I'm going to give you 5 minutes to sit over there on that bench and you can cry it out, do whatever you want to do. And you let me know when you're ready to go back in the store. Otherwise, we can get in the car, we can go home. And she's like, all right. And she walked over and she sat on the bench. She thought about crying. She goes, I'm done, Dad. I'm like, okay.
Wow. Being a dad blows.
So
I would never want to do that.
So the impact of Santa, until, well, obviously for obvious reasons, you got to hang on to it while you can.
Yeah, because nobody does that in March. You know, like, right. Hey, quit acting like an a-hole, you little kid, or I'm going to tell Santa. No one brings up Santa. I would. I'd be bringing up Santa year round.
Oh, dude, I saw the effect of it, I've been using it a lot because you got to capitalize during the holiday.
Oh, I absolutely would. I'm going to try that on Nora. I'm like, hey, better act right, woman.
You ain't getting your pajamagram.
Santa, well, that's already on the
that's
way.
What I
so
mean.
It's, yeah, that's already been ordered.
No, you can wear it.
Huh?
You can wear it instead. Can wear,
you know, they make something with the seat that folds
the
out.
Old school?
Like yeah, they, where you unbutton the seat. Yeah. I was like, ooh, I need those. I need the pajama. Because if you got on a footy pajama, you ain't getting out that easy. And I need that trap door in the back.
Dude, remember the thing? I always had the NFL ones. And even when I was real little, the NFL footy pajamas. And the problem there was the traction wasn't traction.
You slip.
Oh, my God. You'd slip and bite it like five different ways.
I never wore pajamas. I don't know if that's a
you just
northern Midwestern thing.
You just freeballed it from like
no,
the
I wore,
age of two?
I wore, yeah, I just wore underwear to bed.
Tidy whities, huh?
Nah, usually my underoos. Did you didn't have underoos?
Nope.
What?
Nope.
Was that a thing when you were a kid?
Basketball shorts.
I know exactly what
I didn't
were,
have pajamas
but I wouldn't
either.
Wear them.
You didn't have underoos?
For nerds. I'm not
I slept in my basketball
Bitch,
shorts.
I was Superman. Superman
in
ain't
your
a
mind,
nerd.
You were. You were super nerdy to everybody
Bro,
else.
I had them red-ass briefs with the yellow belt, and then I had the Superman shirt that had the, and then I would take a red towel and safety pin it around my neck Like I was Superman.
Like I said.
You couldn't tell me nothing.
Really?
Yes.
I would never. Even as a kid.
Really?
Me too. No. Right there with you, Nick.
Oh, my God. Boy, I thought I was Superman. I'd get on the couch. What we used to do, this was bad. I don't even know if my parents know this, but we still, before they got divorced, we lived in a two-story house. And upstairs, we had like a game room with a balcony. And below the balcony was all the living room and the furniture. And I would put on my Superman underoos and safety pin that cape. And then I would get on the balcony and I would jump from the second story down to the couch like I was flying. Did that all the time.
You were really proud of them underoos.
All the time. Thought I was Superman. You kidding me? I don't think my parents ever found out, but Mo, I tore that couch
up. He does the same thing now.
I was living a one story. Nice try, though.
All right. By the way, and I don't need Louisiana hate like the ones the stuff Barry got because I've been pro Louisiana. I was just playing around.
Did you piss somebody off?
No, but I will tell you this. Thank you, Donna, loyal suspect. But she pointed out, because I had mentioned how great Joe Burrow's speech was and how he referenced the tough upbringing he had and the poverty he went through. Based on his speech, they have gotten over $150,000 in donations for the food bank from his hometown.
That's awesome.
And just since the weekend. So fantastic stuff happening there. Thanks to Joe Burrow. So good stuff there.
That's great.
Yeah.
By the way, Chris Householder texted the show. Oh. I've told my son I'll kill Santa numerous times all year.
What?
Fantastic.
What kind now, of, that what is kind something of, that will last a life.
That's hilarious.
If I knew my dad was a killer, I don't think I'd
what
mess with him.
What kind of awful-ass parent?
Keep this up, and I'm going to stab Santa.
Yeah, you keep this up. And when he comes down that chimney, bam! I'm going to shoot his ass. No presents for nobody.
What?
You're an awful parent, Chris Householder. Good for you. Good job, buddy.
That might be a bit much, yeah. All right, so we're going to continue to roll on. It is a Monday on The Usual Suspects. Plenty more to get to, and if you want to join the show, 713-780-3776. Call, text, hit us on Twitter. Back with more of The Final Hour right here on ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.
I'm Laura Reynolds with CarPro.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Back on The Usual Suspects, final hour of the show. We take it till 4, Blitz takes you till 7. You know how we do it around here, in which if you miss any part of the show, you can always go to ESPN975.com, and at the top of the page, you'll find a tab for The Usual Suspects. You click on that, you find the hours of the show you missed, and you can catch up on anything and everything that we've discussed. And while you're at it on the front page, there are ways that you can follow directions, download the app, take us anywhere, everywhere, listen to us all across the country, no matter what you're doing, where you are. And what you got to do, no excuses, if you really are a loyal suspect. With that said, last segment, we were talking a little bit about Santa, childhood, stories, and somehow, for some way, partner, you have a way of drumming up these kind of things.
Uh-huh.
I look at the board for a call, and it says Barry's childhood.
Now, is this Steve from the Houstonian?
I don't know. We'll have to find out.
Okay.
Steve, you're on The Usual Suspects. What's going on?
Yes, I believe Janarius Jenkins could best describe Barry's childhood.
Nick? Now, we have got to do a better job of getting our interns to figure out.
Was that? That wasn't him.
Yes, it was.
Even if it was.
It absolutely was.
I don't know.
Absolutely was, in my opinion.
I don't even get it.
I don't either, but.
I believe it's Janarius. You could hear him high-fiving himself.
That was
weirdo.
Awful.
That was terrible.
So I know that it's out of season and all.
Sweet life you got going, Steve. Sweet life. How was that? Go ahead. Weirdos.
Couple of moves in baseball worth mentioning over the weekend after the conclusion of the winter meetings. Madison Baumgartner is now a member of the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Mm.
Got himself $85 million over 5 years. So if you're a mathematician or not, it's about $17 million a year to continue his career. So that is news in the baseball world, because there was a guy that was going to be highly sought after by the Angels, people were saying. Lots of other teams were interested in kicking the tires on Mad Bum, and now he's going to the Diamondbacks. Looks to be the replacement at a cheaper price for Zach Greinke. And the one that kind of, for both of us, stung a little bit, a guy that had been rumored a lot of different ways to a lot of different places, but Corey Kluber, the ace of the Cleveland Indians, is now a Texas Ranger. And they didn't have to give up much to get it. They gave up a kid in the minors, in the early stages of the minors, throwing 100 miles an hour. And they gave up Delino DeShields Jr. And they got themselves a frontline starting ace pitcher in Arlington.
Well, first of all, the deal for Mad Bum, that was pretty good value for him.
Really good value.
Yeah. And when you consider he's 30.
I was just going to say, but doesn't he look older than that?
He feels older than that.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good deal, because he probably could have gotten north of 100 over 5 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, he was 9-9, but you got to consider who he pitched for last year. And he's a guy that there are times when I'm not very high on what he's done, because I feel like he's been slightly inconsistent the last couple of years.
I think it was over usage during those heyday years.
Yeah,
too.
And it very well could be. But that's a hell of a deal for the Diamondbacks.
Because he was still effective down the stretch last year, and when you need a big performance in a big game, I would still trust to put him on the mound.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would run him out there, for sure.
Yeah, you know, and at least he's going to continue to hit, too, because he brings a good stick, too. Dude, he's a home run hitter. When he's pitching, he has the ability, kind of like Zach Greinke, in a different way. Greinke's not going to hit the long ball for you like that, but Mad Bum with a bat in his hand, there's a chance he can go yard on you.
Fair enough. I was trying to look up his numbers, because I feel like he's fallen off over the years.
Yeah, I mean, bottom line is, look, you're right. It was a deal, and I think at a good price. I don't think he's going to do any damage in Arizona, and I don't think they are. Like I said, the one that really bothered me was Kluber.
So 2017, 2018, obviously he had some injury issues, 4-9 and a 6-7 record, but up until then, he was rolling along, and then last year, you know, 390 ERA, but the whip kind of lets you know that he still had his command and his control, 1.127 whip. So I think another year away from those injuries, if he can stay healthy, he probably starts to get closer back to his prior form in 2016 when he had he went 15-9 with a 2.78 ERA. So I think it's a good value for him, too, because even I looked it up just now on SpotTrack, and they had him at $105 million over 5 years is what his market value was, yeah. 21 a year. So good for the Diamondbacks. The one with the Rangers, boy, just from a standpoint of a rival, and that one stings a little bit. But they didn't give up much to get him, like you said, and I think that they've got him possibly for the next two years,
I believe, yes.
Because there's a vesting option for the team as well as what he already had. The Indians had picked up his option for next year and then traded him, so he was on the books for that, plus the vesting option, so...
And he's pretty affordable, too. So, I mean, look, they say he's going to be ready for spring training. He broke his arm, if you remember, in season last year. So, you know, he's got some rehab work to do. But look, there's a guy that's, again, on the big stage. He's been experienced.
Oh,
he's
man.
Been there, done that. He's been effective. He's won, I think, multiple Cy Youngs.
Yeah.
So, you know, you got a guy that can really, really, really pitch for you in Arlington now, where they've always been struggling to find pitching.
And I don't know if he has multiple Cy Youngs, I'd have to look, but he's 33. But the thing is you've got 2 years left, and that's about right. He's got two more good years, so you don't have a long commitment to an aging guy. You've got 2 years left at $17.5 and $18 million, which is damn good money for a guy of Corey Kluber's status as a frontline starter. So they got a good deal, man. And they didn't, like you said, they didn't give up a ton, I don't think.
Two-time Cy Young Award winner in 2014 and 2017. So there's the two that I referenced. So he's got those. And again, like I said, new stadium. They've been trying to shake things up a little bit. They were in on the Rendon discussions. But to get a guy like Corey Kluber, it's a nice ad for the Texas Rangers, which you don't like them being in your division and doing those things. First Rendon to the Angels, now Kluber to the Rangers. Teams around you are getting better.
And Astros are not getting better. They're still good.
They're still elite,
but yeah, they're losing guys.
Yeah.
But that's going to happen. I mean, this is the nature of sports. As you ascend and become great, you end up not being able to afford everybody. That's just how it goes.
And so breaking news just in to the station. If you missed it, it's just breaking now. Guy had a big-time catch yesterday for the Seattle Seahawks. Josh Gordon violated again PEDs and substance abuse, suspended indefinitely by the NFL. So there's one of those teams with only three losses in the NFC that's going to be one receiver short going forward with the Seahawks losing Josh Gordon just now.
And Adam Schefter reporting that the Chiefs claim Terrell Suggs, who said he wouldn't play for anybody but the Raiders.
And interesting to see if he'll report with a chance to win a Super Bowl. So we'll see how those things go. But there's some NFL news for you as well. We'll continue to roll on. We got 30 minutes on the clock when we come back. Half hour left of the show. If you want to join us, please do. 713-780-3776. HRNP listener line. Call, text, hit us on Twitter. Usual Suspects. ESPN 97.5.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
30 minutes to go on a Monday on The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. Talked a lot about the Texans in hour number one, a big win against the Titans. Are you on or are you off the bandwagon? J.J. Watt supposedly is not out of the question for being brought back between now and the end of the season to help this team as they get ready for hopefully the playoffs.
So are we on the same page that the Texans win the division and the Titans don't make the playoffs? Or who's your second wild card team? Is it the Steelers?
Took a big hit, and we know the Bills are going to get in, and the Bills' chances of winning the division, even if they would beat New England in Foxborough this weekend, not great. So Bills are your number one wild card. Second wild card
it's
comes
between
down
the
to
Steelers and the Titans, right?
Yeah, I could see the Titans beating the Steelers out. I don't know what the tiebreakers are.
Steelers have the Jets and the Ravens.
Yeah, we know their schedule is pretty light.
And the Titans have the Saints and the Texans left.
What are the records right
That's
now?
That's a difficult schedule compared to
what are the two teams' records right now?
8-6 and 8-6.
Okay, so they're dead even. Then just based on records alone and schedule going forward, I would say the Steelers should get in instead of the Titans.
Steelers have the tiebreak over the Titans because they have the better conference record.
And the reason why I would throw that into the mix as well is when you talk about a Saints team that wrapped up the division weeks ago, they're still playing for a lot because of the fact that home field's going to be so important with all these teams bunched up at 11-3.
Yep.
So they have something to play for, and obviously, depending on how the cards fall, but I would think that that's...
Same thing with the Ravens. You would think that, well, that's a layup, but it might be, because that's the last game of the season for the Steelers, but there's only one game separating the Ravens and the Patriots right now.
So I'm saying, and from the Texan standpoint with the Tennessee game, it's probably going to still mean something to them, so they're going to play that out. And on the flip side, I don't know if Baltimore's going to have anything to play for, if by then it's not either solidified they're the one or the two in New England, whatever they do. So we'll see how it plays out. I just don't think that, again, because of the records and the 8-6 and everything like that, it's crazy to me to think the Steelers, with all their injuries and all the people they've lost, are going to get in.
Ravens have Browns and Steelers left. Patriots have Bills and Dolphins.
Yeah, Patriots are just going to... Bills game, I think, is going to be more of a handful than anybody might think. I think the Bills are going to give them a game.
Certainly. That would make them with the same record.
Like I said, I don't know what the tiebreakers are there.
Well, it would be head-to-head, and what do they do was the... Let's see here. Yeah, if the Bills win, then they split, so then it goes to the best division record. And the best division record would be, well, that would be a tie, so then it would go to best conference record.
Yeah.
That would be a tie.
Really?
Yeah. So then you'd have to go another step further, which at that point, I don't know if it goes to strength of schedule.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that works, but I didn't realize it was that close. I thought there was something cut and dried that said even if the Bills beat the Patriots that – they're not going to win the division. I thought I had seen that somewhere, too.
No, because they're 11-3, 10-4, right? So then you would go to, 11-4 and 11-4. That would mean that in the division, New England would be 4-1, and the Bills would be 4-1. And the conference, In the conference, that would put New England at 7-4 and the Bills at 8-3. So that would be the tiebreak. The Bills would get the tiebreak. That's a big game for them.
Yeah. If that's the case, definitely.
Wow.
And then this whole Patriots, speaking of Patriots, this controversy thing not only won't go away, but now Patriots are mad because this special they were shooting on one of their scouts that led them to shoot at the Cincinnati-Cleveland game 2 weeks ago.
Which
and
paid off,
video
by the
of the
way.
Sidelines. Yeah, and they won big, right? But at the same time, we expected them to. But the video has now surfaced. Evidently, it was aired on television. But when you look at the video and you listen to the audio, and Nick's got it for you, one, the Bengals security guy was pretty sharp, but this does not sound like something that was done by mistake.
And this is a piece you're filming on your advanced scout?
Yeah.
Yeah. Come on, guys. I don't see the advanced scout in this footage.
No, it's not. We were trying to get some field perspective. It's my bad.
That's not the field.
I don't know why you would think you could take that.
I didn't know.
How do you know?
I didn't know. I'm sorry.
The whole time the video is of the sidelines of the Bengals.
Wow.
And then the security guy for the Bengals basically says to him, guys, I'm telling you right now, I mean, what you're shooting is pretty cut and dry. It's pretty, and the Patriots guy is like, you know, we can delete it. I mean, all you gotta do is press the button right here and delete it, and it goes away, and it's gone forever, and everything like that. And he goes, damage is already done, fellas. You know, I've already seen it. And they're like pretty kind of staunch and going, yeah, but if I delete it, and he's like, nope. And so they continue to talk about it, but then already Belichick is not happy about all of this. And of course, it's a distraction and it's out there. But now the rumor is that the Patriots have suspended this employee, that they're trying to say, obviously, they're trying to dust it all off and saying he acted on his own. This is not something we told him to do.
Well, I tell you what, just listening to it, my gut reaction is when this first dropped, you guys know that I was like, look, this is dumb. I'm usually a smoke fire guy. And yes, I think the Patriots are cheaters based on what they've done in the past. But why would you need to cheat against the Bengals? That doesn't make a sense. But to hear that guy try to worm his way out of that, and the way he answered it, just the tone of his voice, the things that he said, kind of makes me feel like it was intentional.
No, I haven't changed my feeling, which I think they're cheating again.
But, I mean, that's evidence. I mean, I wasn't going to make that assumption based off of just hearsay. But hearing him, I would say that
he sounded too guilty.
Yes.
He really did.
That's a great way to put it. I was going to say there were ill intentions. He sounded guilty.
And he apologized a lot. He goes, how did you not know? He goes, I didn't know. I'm sorry. And you can tell from the way he apologized that he totally knew, and he was just saying that he didn't know, and he was playing dumb. He took the I'm playing dumb route. Because a lot of times you can play dumb, and that might get you out of a situation. He knew better, and I think that the Bengals security guy knew that he knew better.
What's weird is it's the Bengals security guy, but it was at the Brown Stadium, so I guess they somehow got word to the Bengals security guys
again,
that they were filming.
Or he's in the press box. You see where the video is?
I wonder if there are people that are just – the NFL is so sensitive and paranoid now that there's somebody's job that's just to scan the stadium to see who's got cameras and where they're pointing.
No, he's not hiding it. He's sitting in the front row of the press box with the window in front of him, and shooting straight down onto the Bengals sidelines, and you can see when he asked to see the video, you can see he's just blatantly shooting in front of everyone in the press box, the Cincinnati sidelines.
And I've never seen footage shot like I've never seen that. Not from the press box, through the window, down that far. I've never seen it like that.
And you know how it is, whether you're shooting with your phone or you're shooting with a camera, you got the side window monitor so that you're seeing what you're shooting, and it shows up plain as day. You're not shooting some guy with like an iPad in his hands. You're shooting the sidelines of the Bengals.
If you're the Patriots, you absolutely have to hate Jay Glazer at this point, right? Because he breaks Spygate, and then he's all over this one. He's like, God, I hate this Jay Glazer guy. Go away.
And you know that it's just, look, the other thing is it's just the long-term ramifications, because all this did was stir up everything to go, well, if they're still doing it this way, and they're still willing to do stupid stuff like this, like you even said, why are you doing it against the Bengals?
Yeah.
You should just win on your merits alone. But instead, it just shows you sometimes when we talk about the depths in which teams focus to get that competitive advantage, whether they call it cheating or not.
So here's what's crazy is if you see the footage itself that they aired on Fox, it starts off with the two teams on the field and it starts off, they're filming the sidelines. They watch the team run on the field. They follow the team onto the field. And then they pan back to the sideline. So if you were trying to get the field, you had the camera fixed on the field and on the players, almost an all 22 type thing. But once they're lined up, you pan back to the sidelines. That's pretty damning evidence.
And then it stays on the sidelines.
Yeah. And it doesn't move for a very long time.
Nope. Nope. And that's why the Bengals security guy is like, guys, seriously? Damage is already done. I mean, he's looking at the same thing they're looking at. And the guy's basically almost kind of like cocky going, you know, I can delete all this. I just press this button right here and it all disappears. And the guy's like, damage is already done.
Well, fellas. He was saying like, no, the footage is going to be gone once I see it and I delete it. He's like, no, if I delete it right now, I can't get it back. You won't even be able to see it. That's the point he was trying to make.
Was it Patriots a threat? Guy, I could delete this and then you can't prove it?
No, it wasn't a threat. It was more about the Bengals security saying, I'm not going to trust you after you just recorded this. I want to see the footage on your memory card and I want to delete it myself. That's what he was saying. Like, he was trying to say, like, look, man, we're not going to just believe that it's deleted just because you said it. Yeah. You know, that's what he was trying to tell.
I would have thought he was saying,
guy was adamant, look, all I got to do is press a couple buttons and this is deleted for forever.
And I would have been like, no, now that's evidence. Sorry. You're not deleting nothing. That's evidence.
Yeah, I think he said it right. The damage is done. Yeah. You had already rolled tape, bro.
Wow.
So this makes you go back to everything, from the videotaping of the walkthroughs and the practices to Deflategate. And then you wonder how much more people didn't find out about, right?
And how long has he been doing this? How many teams he's done this to?
Four? No, I was saying two and four. Like, yeah. How many do you do it two? How many do you do it four? You know, how much has it helped? But then, I hate to do this, but to bring it back locally, now you're thinking about, okay, so now how does that translate to MLB and the Astros?
I don't think it has the, and I don't know, there's no connection there.
The connection to me is in sports, people think that the competitive nature of things is just on the field and on the practice field. But teams obviously are going to, when they say any means necessary, there's some truth to that.
Yeah, but I don't understand the connection between the two.
I obviously think in sports, look, I think from the standpoint of one, and we mentioned this and talked about it a week or so ago, but the Astros now, when MLB looks at this, last thing they want to do is end up with a Patriots situation and look at this and say, if we don't do this and cover it and scour everything and really handle it the right way, and it could come back up in a year or two and find out there was more and stuff we missed or it was a bigger problem, I think it could create an instance where MLB is going to focus a little bit harder, crack down a little bit more.
If there was more cheating in the MLB going on,
we don't know.
But I'm saying then there's the connection. But I don't know. It's two different sports. It'd be like, you know, cheating, and it's like saying, oh well, you look at the performance enhancing drugs that they take in cycling, and try to relate that in some way, shape, or form to baseball. It's just not. It's not to me. It's just similar, but it's not the same. There's no connection. If the Red Sox come out and cheat, or if we found out the Tampa Bay Rays are cheating, then it becomes something of an epidemic in that sport.
But we knew Yankees, Red Sox, and other teams were also doing stuff.
Right, but what I'm saying is that the Patriots getting caught again doesn't have anything to do with the Astros or MLB. It's two separate things.
Okay. I think it does. I think how they handle this Astros situation, I think it does, but that's fine. All right, we've got one segment to go on the show. We'll put a bow on it, wrap it up, and turn it over to the Blitz next. Don't go anywhere. It's the Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
Ugh.
Final segment of the show, Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. As we take you through till 4, Blitz takes you till 7. This Cowboy thing that we didn't get to, boy, that was a big deal about the toss at the start of the game and the kick and what was said, and Dak said he misspoke, and did he say defer or, you know.
Well, he clearly said kick first and then changed it to defer. And my thought is, well, can you change before the referee announces it, it's okay to change your mind?
Well, and then it was like it had an undertone to the entire first half, regardless of what was happening on the field. And the Fox people were obviously talking about it quite a bit. Then as Aaron Andrews goes to talk to Jason Garrett as they're leaving the field, he says, hey, I heard you have audio. I need to know what's going on with this kick thing. And they were like, well, how does he know while he's coaching on the field? And obviously someone in the press box or someone with the Cowboys said, look, there is
audio of
it, and they have it.
Yeah.
So then it was a big deal. And then the other thing was they said that the league, there's like four or five ways that the league is allowed to get involved in replay and otherwise. And this did not fall under one of those categories, but they thought it was important enough that at the half, the league office got involved, listened to the audio, determined that what they really meant was to defer to the second half, and let both coaches know after they were both in the locker room that Dallas would be receiving the second half.
Yeah, I think what the league said is that they're allowed to get involved in administration of the game, and that's what this fell under. And so that they had the right to step in regards to how the game was administered, and the kickoff and, you know, coin toss being part of that. And that's why they felt like they had the right to step in and make a change.
The good news is the game was so out of hand, it didn't matter.
Didn't matter.
If it was a close game, it would have been a bigger deal.
Definitely.
But that, you know, it got to be a pretty big, like, whodunit, what are we going to do kind of thing. And then the league got involved. Look, you know what? As much as I don't, because again, they kept going back and forth going, does this really fall under one of those categories or whether they're allowed to get involved or not? The bottom line, like we always say, is the main thing is to get it right. At the end of the day, the main point is just to get it right.
Yep.
And when you think about it, I would like to see league offices get involved more on a more consistent basis, even if sometimes it doesn't fall under a category of you can or you can, or under, you know, I'd like them to be able to say, hey, look, I mean, how many people would have loved to say, hey, there's something that happened that could affect the outcome of the game. Let's get it right now.
Yeah, that would be good. But then if they only selectively do that, then it's an issue.
Yeah, I get that you need some. But again, it just depends on the magnitude. All things are important to every team in terms of
the games
and stuff. Yeah, but
and if you didn't do it in one game, but you did it in the other, then they're going to be like, well, how come you didn't do it over here?
And that's the other thing we said. The league was on a pretty staunch roll here of like less than 10% of calls overturned on pass interference. And now all of a sudden, they're on a roll where they are going back and reversing pass interference calls. They did it in a game with the Arizona Cardinals yesterday against the Browns. And the minute that you saw the replay, I was like, well, that is, but there's no way they're going to reverse it. And sure enough, Kingsbury dropped the flag right in front of the official that missed it. They went to commercial break and they came back and said, yeah, there's a new trend now, because in the last couple of weeks, league officials have been reversing a lot of calls, and this is another one.
Well, that's because I'm sure they were catching some heat for not reversing obvious calls that were or were not, or, you know, that they got wrong. And then they were trying to be sticklers like, well, no, we're going to err on the side. No. Err on the side of getting it right. Forget the referee's feelings or the back judge's feelings or whoever made the call. Just get it right. Well, and stop trying to prove a point. And that's what they were doing.
Yeah, and I think the way that Joel was wording it is like, it almost sounds like NFL has analytics. Like, all right, well, we haven't been overturning pass interferences. You know, it hasn't been more than 10%. Maybe we should increase that. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You know what?
They were tracking it. People were tracking that. Absolutely.
And you know who you blame for that? Mark Cuban. And I know it's crossing sports again, but it's true. Mark Cuban started years ago in charting who officiated their games, how they called certain things during their games, how many calls they got wrong during their games, and then they started sending it all to the league office. So then, as a spinoff of that, there were websites and otherwise that started to calculate how many missed calls, how many calls of a certain, you know, specific area of the rule book were being either missed or whatever. Just the same way when I told you guys when we used to go to the league meetings every year that the we'd have to have a half day with the officials in the same room where they would call us out. And then after they were done embarrassing us for things that we had done and said that were wrong in their mind, they would say, now, just so you guys know, these are our two points of emphasis this year. Like, for instance, on the high pick and roll, if a guy sets a screen, if he nudges, gives him a hip or a forearm, they used to let that go as part of a pick. They said, that's a point of emphasis. Every time we see it this year, we're going to call. Or the traveling calls. Like after the Harden 1 year developed the Euro step. And they said, we're going to start watching this. They kind of wanted us to relay it to the team as well, but they also had their own separate meetings with the team to let them know. And you got to believe that you're right, Nick. The NFL had meetings or they sent out memos that said, look, after a lot of scrutiny and the fact that we saw the numbers, we're going to be paying closer attention to.
They were relying on you guys to relay it? That's kind of weird.
Indirectly. So they, when we went back from a broadcast meeting, inevitably we were going to talk to the coach. I would always go back and go with McHale and say, hey, you realize at the broadcast meetings last week, we met, the official said this isn't this. And he goes, yeah, we're supposed to have a conference call and then a meeting later. Oh. I'm sure it's going to come up. But it was just a way of them for even then to prepare for it. And the Rockets were smart. They would bring in NBA officials during training camp, and they would not only have them speak to the team, but then they would do scrimmages where the referees would call it exactly how they were going to call it during the season. And especially they would get ex-NBA officials or guys that knew, and it would help them immensely in being prepared for the fact that if you're not used to it, something that you were doing for like 4 or 5 years and getting away with, and you're going to get it called and it was going to tick you off, it kind of took the edge off a little bit.
Yeah, that would be smart. I don't know. I'm assuming teams do that, not just in NBA, but across the board, right?
Well, you would think so. But again, just like a lot of teams, you would think all do analytics.
Yeah.
And some teams are more ahead of the game than others.
A different way, yeah.
And some are going to fight it tooth and nail because they believe it's not the way the games were supposed to be played.
I thought about this yesterday, and it could be a completely, like, a really dumb idea, but they've never thought of, like, a judging system for the replays where there's probably three or four or five other referees in a remote location that reviews the instant replay and then put their vote in as to what they think, like, as to overturn it or not. And if there's three out of the five, you know, officials that say this should be overturned, then it should be. And then you can kind of go back and look, hey, these five people, this is what three of them said, this is what two of them said. They never considered that?
But you don't have that
much
time.
That's a good idea.
Because here's the
thing. But you don't add, you can't do it efficiently.
No, yeah, if you're reviewing it, everybody's reviewing it.
You guys realize the head of officials is in that room in New Jersey whenever they, in the case of the NBA, the head of NBA officiating is in the room making the decision. They take it out of the hands of the referees at the game because they don't want them to have some kind of a, based on how the game was being played or something like that, make the call and then also have to scrutinize their own. And one of the three guys say, yeah, you blew that one. The head of NBA officials, Joe Borgia, is in the room. And a lot of times, if there's officials that aren't working that night, they'll have some of them in the room, too. They try and do that, but for the sake of timing and speed, they try and do it as quick as possible without the voting.
I thought
but
about
I could
that,
see,
too.
But I could see, I kind of like that idea where you've got, in the same room, you've got three or five officials so that you always have a majority vote.
Right.
But they're all looking at the same screen together. And then, you know, there's either no conversation or whatever, but it doesn't matter. But everyone gets to vote. You know, and if it's three against two, then that's the ruling.
Yeah, I mean,
because just one person making that decision.
I do see the added time argument, but at the same time, you can also say it's a bad system because look, the boxing uses three judges, and look how bad that is. Yeah. So it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work, but I feel like more eyes.
Well, would it add time? I mean, if you're like, okay, this is the play. Everybody's looking at the same play on the same monitors going at the same time. Whether it's just more eyes. It's not more time.
Well, but
it's just more sets
of
eyes.
That's what I looked at it as.
But you have to take the vote and get everybody to get their opinion weighed in. You got to hear it all.
No, you can just do a quick
buzzer. It's already too long. Just when you think about the heat of a battle, especially if a team's out of timeouts, then you got one team saying, look, with every minute that this takes longer, the coach is able to have like a mini timeout and draw up a play and do this.
But you don't have to get their reasons why. You just they look at it and they either vote stands, confirmed, or overturned. And they just have three buttons and they push. Oh, I think that should be overturned.
And I don't know that that would work. I just thought that, I thought about that yesterday when I watched ESPN. I'm like, well, you guys always have these problems not making the – okay, we know making the call is hard to do in real time.
Yeah.
But you guys are struggling to get the replay right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what else could you do that but more people – and I don't know if that necessarily works because maybe one official or former official views that particular play differently than the
next. So do three and not five. But
I mean, it's still majority regardless.
Yeah, I do like the idea of having more than one person being responsible because sometimes it is objective. You and I can look at it and see things differently, right? Mm-hmm. You might be like, eh. To me, it looked like – remember the punt that bounced off the dude's shoulder and it didn't get called or it got called? And they were like, well, to us, it looked like the punt went out. I think it was the Jets game, right? Jets-Ravens game. Mm-hmm. Said to us, it looked like the punt hit him in the back, but they didn't overturn it. Well, you and I might see that differently. So if he's the third set of eyes and he sees it as the ball hit his back, well, two out of three. And it would all be at the same time looking at the same review.
And it documents your mistakes so that you can go back and get disciplined by the NBA. If
When the season starts this year in the NBA, Christmas Day – When national TV starts, one thing you will enjoy is that head of officials that's making those calls, when there's a replay call, he's going to have a camera right in front of him, and he's going to have to answer to the broadcast team of what happened and why.
I do like that.
Which should be a very cool element, just like the NFL does with their ex-NFL officials in the booth.
I like that.
That'll be cool.
Yeah.
All right, Tuesday's another day. We're going to be here, so hopefully you will be every day, 1 through 4 p.m. on ESPN 97.5. For Barry and Nick, I'm Joel. Have a great night, everybody. The Blitz is coming up next right here on ESPN 97.5.